U.S. President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un touched down in Singapore Sunday, one day before their much-anticipated summit. Kim is the first North Korean leader to visit the city-state. After landing, he met with Singaporean Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong to thank him for hosting, saying, if successful, quote, the Singapore government's efforts will remain recorded in history forever. Trump left G7 in Canada before it officially ended and flew directly to Singapore, touting the summit as a one-time chance to forge peace between the two countries.
One of Van Gogh's early landscape paintings sold on Monday in Paris for $8.27 million, the first Van Gogh to be auctioned in France for more than 20 years. Painted in 1882, it shows peasant women working on land under a cloudy sky. It was inspired by the countryside around The Hague in the Netherlands, where Van Gogh spent a short but formative period.
When President Donald Trump slapped a 30% tariff on imported solar panels, it was meant as an America First move to protect the U.S. solar panel makers. But instead, it's cast a dark cloud over the U.S. renewable energy industry, forcing companies to cancel or freeze billions of dollars of installation projects that were dependent on those once cheap solar panels from overseas, especially from China.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It is June 11th, and it's 5:11 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell. Another business day and another business week getting underway on the broadcast today. A little bit later in the program, we're going to be talking about what you should be wearing at work now that the seasons are changing from winter and spring to summer. What should your work attire be? Marilyn Bird will be here from Robert Half and office team in Chicago. In a minute, we'll bring in our first guest to talk about whether or not tax reform may be squeezing charitable giving. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, and it will begin with futures in the U.S., pointing toward a positive open on Wall Street later, up about 34 points on the Dow. NASDAQ and S&P futures have turned mixed now. In London, markets are generally higher, up almost three-quarters at 58 points. The DAX in Germany is higher by about 0.5%, and the CAC in France is up just about a quarter of a percent as well. Markets in Asia generally higher as well. Asia, of course, front and center as the president begins what is going to be a historic summit with the North Korean leader later today into tomorrow. The Nikkei going to finish the day up almost 110 points, about 0.5%. The Hang Seng is up about a quarter, a little bit more than a quarter. Oil is trading at $65.06 a barrel, which is up about 68 cents. Make that down about 68 cents. A couple of stories before we begin this morning. Health officials say a salmonella outbreak linked to pre-cut melon has now sickened 60 people in five Midwestern states. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says Cato Foods LLC on Friday recalled pre-cut watermelon, honeydew, melon, cantaloupe, and fruit medleys containing at least one of those melons that were produced at its facility in Indianapolis. It says the five states where people have been sickened include Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Missouri, and Ohio. The CDC says the fruit was also distributed to stores in Georgia, Kentucky, and North Carolina. It is sold in clear plastic clamshell containers at Costco, JC, Kroger, Payless, Owens, Sprouts, Trader Joe's, Walgreens, Walmart, and Whole Foods. Amazon officials say people should throw away or return products. German Chancellor Angela Merkel found the contentious Group of Seven summit with the President Trump, sobering and depressing in her words, but says European leaders won't be taken advantage of on trade. She conceded in an interview on German public television yesterday that the meeting's outcome wasn't a great thing and that she has spoken of a sobering experience for her on this matter. And she says that it's becoming clear that the European Union and Germany specifically can't count on its relationship with the United States any longer. We begin this morning with charitable giving. Tax reform squeezing charitable giving, and groups like United Way are concerned they may have a tough time attracting future donors and raising needed funds. Jonathan Baer is with us this morning. He's with CBS News, has written about this, a business department there at CBS News. Jonathan, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thanks for having me.
Talk to us about what we're seeing already. Is it too early to tell about charitable giving, or is there some data that's already coming in?
Well, since tax reform, they doubled the exemption. It makes it a lot less likely that people, particularly middle class people, are going to give them less incentive to make a charity. And some of the data is showing that. And groups like the United Way told me that they're preparing for a big full fundraiser, and the market is going to fall off. It's going to be down from last year. So it's a concern, and it seems like it's going to be a growing concern. As the year goes on, a lot of charitable giving is back end loaded, is given in the later half of the year, it's going to be a problem for sure.
The tax reform law, of course, that we're talking about doubled the standard deduction for taxpayers that they could take on their taxes. So for individuals, it goes to $12,000, $18,000 for heads of household, $24,000 for married couples. The idea here is that people won't be able to itemize those deductions. Is it going to be middle-class people that aren't donating more to charity, or is it going to be higher earners?
It's going to be, the higher earners is not going to really affect that much. It's going to be middle class people. Like, say, if you're going to donate, say, $1,000 to a charity, you're going to donate a little bit less. And people don't donate $2 to the charity just for the tax. But it just makes them, it'll make them donate less. And a lot of people donate a lot. If a lot of Americans, that's a little less charity, and it's been a big hit to the bottom line of non-profit organizations.
Jonathan, hang on with us. We're going to continue our conversation with Jonathan Bear this morning from CBS News.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Investors go back to work today, having left the major stock indexes parked over the weekend on higher ground. The Dow Jones advanced 75 points on Friday to close at 25,316. The NASDAQ composite picked up 10.5 points. The Standard & Poor's 500 gained 8.5. The Canadian dollar fell against all its major competitors after President Trump withdrew his support for a joint Group of Seven statement and then tweeted criticisms of Canada's Justin Trudeau. 7 years before its centennial, one of the big three automakers might be preparing to drive off into the sunset. Chrysler has only two brands wearing its badge, the 300 sedan and the Pacifica minivan. With parent company Fiat looking for a new CEO, some industry watchers see a shaky future ahead for Chrysler. Meanwhile, Rent-A-Center has decided that it's no longer for sale. The company runs 2,400 rent-to-own appliance, furniture, and home accessory stores, and saw a decent uptick in same-store sales in the first quarter of this year. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. We're on with Jonathan Burr this morning, business reporter at CBS News. He's written about whether or not tax reform is going to be squeezing charitable giving and groups. And Jonathan, I know you talked to the United Way about this. They're concerned, are they? And what are they doing to perhaps counter this?
Well, they are concerned, and they're trying to get more donations from business groups and from wealthy individuals to try to make up the difference. And it's going to be tough because they're hoping for a flat year. So. And flat is never good. Nonprofits are not, they're not in the business to make money, but they don't want to lose money either. So, it's going to be a challenge for them.
And I'm guessing they're looking to those corporate donors to pick up the slack where as we've been talking before the break about the regular earners like you and me who may not be giving as much. They're going to try to ask them to pick up the slack a little.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
All the other nonprofits are in the same situation.
And that was going to be my next question. If the United Way is feeling this, I can imagine what some smaller charities and organizations are feeling. Do you get a sense of what's going on at their places? And is this sort of a red alert situation?
I think you're right. I think that smaller charities are, particularly ones that survive on smaller donations, are worried as well. I don't have a really comprehensive look at that, but that's what I gathered from the research I did from the article.
Let's talk a little bit about the numbers here. The Tax Policy Center says the number of people who may itemize charitable contributions could be cut by more than 16 million. Is there a total giving number there attached to that number? I mean, what kind of total are we talking about?
It's obviously billions of dollars. I don't have a number attached to that. It's a good point, but it's significant, and it's significant, and it's something that nonprofits of all sorts all over the country are worried about, and worried about in a big way.
I know that your story talks about donor fatigue. What are the organizations meaning by that?
Well, I mean, people. There's, you know, if everyone's getting hit up for money at the same time, you know, people are going to start to tune out the messages they're seeing. You know, it's sort of like, you know, there's only so much generosity. There's only a certain amount of generosity people have, and if they hear from a lot of people and they're running for money, they're worried that more people will tune out the message of nonprofits.
I'm guessing that we will see what the result of some of this is in a couple of months. The United Way, their annual giving period is coming up later this year, is it not?
Yes, it is. They do it in the fall.
And so when will we know whether or not they've had it rough?
I don't know. I'm not exactly sure when they'll know the results of it, but it's going to be by the end of the year for sure that they'll have a better sense. As your personal holiday season, I'll have a better sense of how things are going for them.
Mm-hmm. Jonathan, has there been any talk about among any of these organizations to try to lobby Congress to change this rule back or fix it so that charitable giving?
There are several bills pending before Congress to fix this situation, but given the paralysis in Washington right now, the experts I've spoken to are terribly optimistic that it ain't going to change anytime soon.
All right. Jonathan, good of you to be with us this morning. We're going to link out to your article later this morning. It's good to have this conversation going. Maybe it will have people reconsider whether or not they're going to stop giving or not.
Right. Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Jonathan Burr, business reporter at CBS News. Again, we'll link out to the story and the podcast to the opening bell a little bit later on this morning.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoNO.com. Scorch, a new Chicago startup, provides recommendations on restaurants, bars, and cafes to visit based on how popular they are at a given time. Instead of using a star rating system to help users identify which places people frequent and like, Scorch's platform works like a heat map. The warmer the color, the buzzier or hotter the place is. Boise, Idaho-based grocery company Albertsons announced that some of its pharmacies, including 5 Jewel Oscos in the Chicago area, will begin offering genetic testing. The tests, made by Genomind, are designed to help patients find the most effective medications to treat mental health issues. And Spring CM, the Chicago software company that helps businesses manage sales contracts and other documents, has hired 3 new executives. It's named Brian Thompson as Vice President of Sales, Rebecca Yoder, its Director of Legal Technology, and Scott Springgate, its Executive Vice President of Services. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoNO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everybody. Welcome back to The Opening Bell, our Monday edition. If you're headed to the closet to pick out what you're wearing to work today, listen up. You could be making the wrong choices. Marilyn Bird is with us, the district president of Robert Half and office team in Chicago, where they have just conducted a survey about this. Marilyn, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm hoping that I picked the right clothing this morning. Always try to keep it professional, but I'm guessing by the headlines from this survey that a lot of people are not doing that.
Things have really changed when it comes to wardrobe at work over the last 5 or 10 years.
Give us a sense of, has it changed for the better or for the worse?
I think it depends on what environment or what your company does. You know, so many companies are trying to modify the workplace and the wardrobe to make it more inviting for employees, make them more comfortable. But at the same time, some environments just require a more conservative look or a more formal look, depending on their client-facing activities.
Yeah, I know that we've had a conversation before on this program about millennials and how millennials sort of have been driving, in some cases, the dress-down nature of offices. But there is a limit, right? I mean, you can't go too far to one side because the managers are watching what you're wearing, aren't they?
They really are. I think that's a great point, and I was glad to see that come out of this survey. Managers are watching, and I think so are the coworkers. It's really maybe an understanding that everyone has to have that what you wear does send a message. It is an impression that you're making on other people, especially during the hours of work, during the day or night.
And now that we're in the summer months, people may be tempted to dress down even further. Are there some obvious never clothing choices for work?
I'd like to think so, yes. I think anything that is too revealing, if it's not something that you would wear to the office, something that reveals too much of your skin, if it's something that is more of a casual outfit, I think of anything that is more costumey, that can be something as well. Or maybe that you could just see in a whole different setting, you know, athletic wear. If you're not going to change your clothing based on going from work to an outside activity, that might be a signal that it's not appropriate for the office.
The survey that the office team did on this shows that, on one hand, items more acceptable to wear to work now versus 5 years ago, jeans, tennis shoes, and leggings. Items less acceptable versus 5 years ago, tank tops, cold shoulder tops, and shorts. I can't imagine ever wearing a tank top to work.
I can't either. Actually, when I read that, I thought, when were shorts and tank tops ever acceptable? However, I think it just shows the line that it's making everyone really think about what's coming into the workplace, especially now that we're heading into warmer weather.
Give us a sense of what we're doing in terms of clothing. Are men versus women more conscientious about what we wear to work and spend more time, or is it vice versa?
You know, I was surprised. In this survey, it said that men actually spend longer amount of time getting ready, choosing their office attire. It's not by much, but it did stand out as something in this particular feedback.
I was surprised about that too, because you would think that perhaps women would spend more time getting ready for work, but it's the other way around. Tell us about where we might be able to go to get a sense of what is correct for the office. Can we ask our boss, or do we need to find some other place to get the answer to this?
If you are currently employed, I think it's very easy to look around in an environment. Most companies do have a formal dress code that's written, so you can consult that, and it's our advice that you would follow that. I think a good rule of thumb is to look at people in more senior positions in your organization and then try to dress like them, because that's sending a message that you can handle that type of responsibility. You're more like them, and you're also trying to follow along with the company culture or format.
There are a couple of potential repercussions to wearing the wrong thing to work. One of them, obviously, is perhaps getting in trouble. The other is advancement. What did this survey find out about both of those things?
You know, it was really highlighted that it matters what you wear, that this survey was actually calling out that it sends an impression to other people, and it can affect your chances of being promoted.
44% of the executives had to talk to employees about inappropriate attire. 32% actually sent somebody home due to their clothing. And managers have no problems taking action in some of these cases. I'm guessing maybe those are the shorts and tank top people that have come into work. Are there places that you could suggest that we could find where we could see trends in workplace attire? I know that when I was coming up, I always looked at some of the men's stores catalogs, mm-hmm. to kind of get an idea of what was casual, what was work attire. Are there places to go to find that information?
I think you can definitely look online. I also think that when in doubt, a suit is always a really good idea. I'm thinking in terms of people that are interviewing. Interviewing, you're never going to get called out for overdressing or being too prepared, but you will be looked at differently if you're underprepared or underdressed. And then in terms of your work environment, there's a lot of different information available in handbooks, interview questions, meetings, talking to more tenured people. I think there's a lot out there if people choose to use it.
Marilyn, I was one of the things of the survey that I thought was a good point to talk about is to separate your wardrobes. You have your weekend wear, you have the stuff that you wear at home, and then the stuff that you wear at work. And this survey found that workers, 2 in 3 employees, actually do keep these wardrobes separate. That's a good way to make sure you never get into trouble.
I think that's a great idea, too. It makes it simple, right? And it also makes it easier on you in terms of preparedness. I think that it really highlights the idea that people that are making good decisions and put some thought into it, rather than just rolling out of bed and taking the first thing available, there's a conscious choice about how to get prepared for work, and that does show in the clothing that you're wearing.
So, Marilyn, as we're headed to our closets this morning to get ready for work, any last-minute advice on choices?
You know what? I think that I come from an environment where it's always good to take a more clean-cut approach. Try to think about the environment that you're serving. And like I said earlier, look at the people in the senior-most positions. It's probably best bet to follow the handbook or dress like them.
Marilyn, good of you to be with us this morning. Thanks for the information.
Thanks again. Have a great day.
You too. Marilyn Byrd, District President of Robert Half and office team in Chicago. We'll post the results of this link to this survey, some of the other information from it in the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later on this morning.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are pointing toward opening gains later this morning on Wall Street, up about 34 points right now. We're still watching the NASDAQ and S&P to try to find direction. Both are flat to just a little positive as we head to 8:30 Chicago time. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Well, as we begin this trading week, a lot of attention will be certainly focused on the results of the meeting of the G7 countries in Quebec and, of course, the upcoming meeting in Singapore between North Korea and the United States. But as we look back to last Friday's close, we saw July hogs ending the day up $1.32 a hundredweight. June cattle ended the day up $1.77 a hundredweight. That contract will terminate later this week. And the August feeder cattle gained $1.50 on Friday. And another promising report for cattle producers, Kansas and Texas fed cattle traded last week at $115 a hundredweight, and that was up $5 from the previous week. And then the grain market, we have been watching that react, of course, to the weather, and it'll probably continue to do that for the next month or so at least. Well, for the next summer, that's right. But anyway, July wheat ended Friday down 3.5 cents a bushel, July corn up 3/4, and July soybeans ended the week down 5 cents a bushel. Looking at the dairy situation, according to the Agri-Dairy Business Letter, the May Class 3 milk price slightly cheery for dairy producers. It jumped 71 cents a hundredweight from April a year ago. And for dairy farmers in Wisconsin, they received an average price of $16.30 for their milk in April, just 10 cents higher than last month's price. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now a couple of stories to wrap up the show this morning. Official figures show that manufacturing output in Britain fell in April at the fastest rate in 5.5 years, a development that raises questions over an economic rebound in the UK in the second quarter. The Office of National Statistics says manufacturing output, which accounts for about 10% of the British economy, shrank 1.5% during the month. That was the largest fall since October of 2012. As a result, overall industrial production, which also includes things like energy output, fell almost 1%. That decline was unexpected. German business groups are pressing for clarity from Britain on its plans for a post-Brexit relationship with the European Union, and you're urging London to allow companies' employees uncomplicated access. Three major business organizations said in a joint statement today that the progress is necessary at an EU summit later this month. They said that they're worried that even a transition phase after Britain leaves the EU next March isn't assured. And a South Korean cryptocurrency exchange says today hackers have stolen about one-third of the coins traded on its market, an announcement that sent Bitcoin prices tumbling to a two-month low. CoinRail said hackers stole cryptocurrencies over the weekend. It did not give a value, but the South Korean news agency cited unnamed industry sources as saying it was about $37 million U.S. dollars worth lost. Bitcoin was trading at $67.80 today, down more than $7,500 from the weekend before. Now, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, the market outlook for today, not a lot in the way of government reports. We'll get a report on economics from an international perspective from Bloomberg, which is out a little bit later today. There are a couple of auctions, including a 10-month, 10-year note auction, a 3-year note auction, and a 6-month bill auction. And net neutrality officially ends today. Looking ahead to the rest of the week, H&R Block earnings tomorrow. AT&T Time Warner decision is expected on their merger Wednesday. The Fed interest rate decision and the Powell news conference, Federal Reserve Chair news conference on Thursday, retail sales for May, and on Friday, the deadline for the White House to publish its tariff list. Just some of the things that could move the markets today and through the week on the Market Desk Outlook.